Thank you very much. Welcome everyone who's tuned in. You're listening to the PNB Programming Committee for February 19th, 2019. And the chair is myself, Catherine Davis, Vice Chair Eric Ramey, and Secretary Jim Dingman. And so we are, I am going to read the agenda, and we can accept the agenda or change the agenda, first being roll call. So let's do that for the public. Grace Aaron?
Here.
Ken Aaron?
Here.
Catherine Davis, present. Benito Diaz?
Present.
James Dingman?
Here.
Steve Pride. I'm
here.
Sorry, Anissa. Thank you. Anissa Faruqi. Okay. Eric Ramey.
Present.
Murray Cliff Smith. Absent. And Tom Voorhees. Absent. Maxie Jackson.
Present.
We have quorum. So appoint a timekeeper. A volunteer for timekeeper.
Sure, Catherine.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Approve the minutes. We don't have the minutes, so we will postpone till the next meeting, which I understand is next week, Tuesday. I have a report from the chair on the status of the motions that we passed. Were sent back to this committee for reconsideration, so I have something to say about that. Changes or additions to the agenda? You wanted to add something, Jim?
Yes, I wanted to put in a motion here concerning this case that will be argued in front of the Supreme Court next week.
No, that's on the agenda.
Okay,
so we wanted a report from Maxie. I thought that was something that...
Yes, yes. I'd like a report from Maxie.
Okay.
All his little going on there.
Okay, so I'm going to stick that in after I give my report, and then we'll go on to your new motion. Okay?
Madam Chair, Maxie.
Yes.
I respectfully would suggest putting my report towards the very end, because I think, as compelling as it may be, the business that's on the agenda probably is more important for the committee.
Okay, that's fine with me. You can do that.
All noble.
So we've added that change, and I have a discussion on consolidating and rewriting the motions previously passed and still on the table, 30 minutes. Vote on the necessity to recraft or reconsider the motions, 10 minutes. If agreed, propose suggestions for fine-tuning motions. If agreed, vote on newly crafted motions. So I will put, I believe I stuck your motion in at the last minute, Jim. I think
right.
I did that while it was in the email. So that will go
okay.
In after my report, okay?
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, so are there any objections to this agenda as amended?
Madam Chair, this is Benito. I have a question.
Yes, Benito.
And I don't know, maybe we could, I would like to discuss for a moment this thing about weekly meetings.
Okay, so let me put that,
I have a question is, when was it decided that we would meet every week? specifically, I asked about it last time, about today. Now I see there is a meeting set for next Tuesday, so then my question becomes, I mean, who sets these meetings?
Okay, so, Benito, I would consider that to be in a change to the agenda to add that discussion. So I will put that in the agenda, and then we can have that discussion. I don't want to have the discussion.
Catherine, with all due respect, I appreciate you saying we're having a discussion, but before anything, I'm just asking the question, who made that decision, when and where? That is the answer.
Okay, as far as I can recall, the decision was made very early on that because we had skipped, we had started very late, we set forth a very ambitious agenda, and these dates were preset. There may have been some additional changes since then because other dates we didn't get quorum, but that was the reason, to be able to get work done despite the fact that the committee started 6 months late. That was the reason, was a group decision. So
about a group decision, but it was a decision, and you're right that it was made when this group started meeting, and that is the same response you gave me last week. So, I got the general idea, and although I don't agree with it, I'm not trying to fight it right at this moment. But my question, and more so refers to, like, we had a meeting last Tuesday, this Tuesday, next Tuesday. Those are three meetings in a row. Well, the group did not decide to do that.
All right.
This discussion at this point, Benito, I consider to be out of order. We're talking about the agenda. Let's approve the agenda or not. Add this to the agenda. Add this discussion to the agenda so that we can... Part of the reason we have a lot of meetings is because there's a lot of work. We don't get it all done, and we continue with the process. Let's put this on the agenda, approve the minutes, and proceed so we can get through this meeting. Okay?
Fine.
Thank you. As a reminder, Jim, what was the motion called that you added to the agenda again?
Yeah.
What was it?
It's the case that will be argued in front of the Supreme Court next week that affects public media throughout the country. The case of Dede Halleck versus Manhattan Neighborhood Access Corporation.
That's enough. Okay. So I just wanted to make sure I have that on my agenda. So are there any objections to the agenda as amended? Okay. So let's proceed. And I'm going to, at the top, I just wanted to give this report, though it's clearly here on your agenda. I'll read it for the public. And this is a report to the PNB Programming Committee from the chair, myself, regarding the passage by the PNB of proposed motion submitted from this committee. Seeing that the objective is to submit motions that will have a positive impact on Pacifica policy and that they also be passed by the PMB, it may be necessary to consolidate and recraft the motions. One, all motions or all of these motions have been returned to the committee for reconsideration. That's by the PMB. I recommend that we discuss some of the issues of concern and create a solution. Okay, generally speaking, there is little support for these motions. In my view, the problem is not wholly regarding the substance of the motions, but the concerns fall on the details. And a list of some of the problems for us to consider are: A, there may be too many motions for the PNB to be able to consider. B, the motions may be too wordy and leave a lot of room for people to quibble over the details. C, some of the motions may seem or appear redundant. D, the motions may be perceived as overreaching and crossing the line from board oversight into staff management. And E, the time constraints and deadlines may be problematic or unrealistic. And I would say that to a large degree that's because of the many delays, not just here but also in the PMB, so that the dates have simply just given are very close to expiring. So that is the what I wanted to share, and I would like to open the floor for comments on this. Hello, please mute. Who's that? Anisha? Oh, okay. Would anyone like to comment on on this presentation?
Jim to the stack.
So that is Ken and Jim. Okay, Ken. Ken?
No, I didn't. I didn't ask to be on the stack. No, thank you.
Okay, so that must have been Jim. Okay, Jim.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sort of gets back to the key issue, as I understand it, and I'm going to express my opinion, which is pretty, I'm pretty open about this. I sort of feel that the most important issue that the PNB should be concentrated on is the fact that the content of the stations collectively in varying ways works in some cases but doesn't work in many cases. So to me, the issue all the time is, how do they oversee the content on the air? And in relationship to the content on the air, since 80% of our revenue comes in from listeners, how do they conceive of how they're going to improve that? How do they think they're going to pay or get an increase in audience and listenership that will then create more fiscal stability? So when I see them, for example, consider overreaching video and audio streaming, or collaboration with journalism broadcast schools, or hybridization, it indicates to me that some of them, as I always have said and will openly say, don't know shit from shinola about broadcasting, period, end of story, and that their experiences...
Hey, Jim, I just have a point. Yeah, Jim, can you tone down the language just a bit, please?
I will. That their knowledge of broadcasting is rather poor. And then for them to question evaluation policy, which is always, I mean, I understand they even passed a motion in June.
Jim, I'd like to interrupt you before you go on. From the perspective that you need to understand that we didn't even get to a discussion on these motions. We couldn't get through one motion at a time. And what I'm conveying to you is the general comments that I receive, not specific to any one motion. And so this is not about being at war with the PMB. This is about doing something constructive to get something constructive done. And so I want, please take that into consideration, that these comments are my own. And they're based on my general understanding of the comments that were made at the PMB. They were not specific to many of the motions. So, you know, it isn't necessary.
Right.
So you don't have to feel that you have to defend yourself in that regard. It's
all
just
right.
my effort to get something done.
This is Grace for the stack.
That. And thank you.
Okay, Jim, go ahead and finish, yeah.
I'm finished, yeah.
Okay, great.
Stack.
Go ahead, Grace.
This came up at the end of a grueling, tedious PNB meeting. And there was one motion from this committee that was on the floor, and the motion was to add disclaimers. Several people spoke on it. There weren't that many people who were on the stack to speak about it. I believe it was Sabrina Jacobs who had the most resistance to it. That was one speaker. And basically, I think that because it came up at a very late time in the evening, after a very difficult meeting, and the main objection was that, from a number of speakers, was that the putting carts for disclaimer carts in every single program was overkill, basically. So it was sent back to this committee for modification. I did not get the impression that the PNB was going to reject all of our motions by any means. I think that it's just difficult to consider so many motions. I mean, it was just a difficult time when it got brought up originally. I think if that motion were modified slightly, it may be acceptable. Disclaimers are needed, or there should be an effort to get them instituted, at least during certain programs. At the discretion, I think if it had been at the discretion of the program director, it might have passed. But it was just tabled. It wasn't rejected. It wasn't voted down. It was tabled. Or it was brought back. It was sent back to this committee for modification. I don't think that it wasn't my sense that the PNB rejected all the motions or had negative feelings about them all. We didn't even look at them on the
right
level. Okay, Maxie.
Yeah, I agree with Grace on a lot of what she said. I think though she highlighted something that we need to take into consideration, and that is as this committee pitches things to the national, it might be useful, and I think this has been mentioned in previous calls, to consult either with the program directors or someone with expertise outside of ourselves, myself included, on whether what we're proposing are best practices or if there's a best way to do it, so that when we pitch it, we can say to the national board, you know, this is something we're proposing. It's been reviewed by XYZ as a standard or a standard practice in media, therefore we're proposing it. And that might sway folks in ways that might be useful, because I think one of the things I think we suffer from is all too many times we have decisions made without a lot of knowledge or understanding of an item. Case in point is underwriting, but I won't belabor that point tonight. I just wanted to make that statement. I think there's ways that we can present from this committee to the national board that might be supported in a way that makes it more of a sound argument, if you will.
Okay. And, all right. Anyone else? Okay. So, yes, who's that?
Yeah, Jim Zusak. Well, I made my opinion rather blatantly known in the beginning. The issue of bringing in more expertise, that's fine. One can do that. That will have to be done by others. But it's an interesting question. Again, it gets back to the question of what do they want to concentrate their major focus of energy on? Should it not be to improve the stations themselves and try to make them cutting edge in the 21st century or not? Now, every single aspect of what we have talked about initially here, I can see bringing in people to footnote everything, okay, like hybridization. I mean, that's a no-brainer. We can certainly find people to do that. I don't know if one can do that in the space of 2 or 3 weeks. But, the question becomes, you know, the intent is to improve the whole quality of everything and introduce different measures that can do that. And, you know, I can see bringing in people from journalism schools. That's probably the easiest thing to start with. The CUME, I mean, there's lots of stuff that one can do, but I'm just saying, like, I have to thus question what their energy is focused on as opposed to what it should be focused on. That's all.
Maxie?
Yeah, Jim, I think what I'm saying is that I think a lot of times things are rejected because of people's opinion rather or belief rather than than solid knowledge or data or research that supports what you're presenting. I think, like I've said before, a lot of what you're proposing I think is sound. The problem is it comes off as subjective. And I think what happens is people hear it, they think to themselves, would I want to do this? And they see it as something that's onerous, and then they shoot it down. And I'm saying that it might be useful if, in fact, this board respects expertise and research and data, that in some of these measures that we bring that to the table as part of the argument, so that they're not saying this is Jim's idea or the committee, you know, versus something that's more steeped in research data and expertise, which I think should have value. I'm hoping it has value.
Right. Jim to stack, and then I'll end. You know, I could call.
I have also something to say, Jim, if you don't mind, before you chime in. I don't know that it will make a difference, but I think I understand what you're saying, and I understand the frustration, but from my perspective, my frustration is not so much with the work and that we're coming up with the committee, but my frustration is the experience of trying to get something through during the PMB. And maybe my subjective opinion, maybe my analysis was too subjective, but I would like to actually get something done. And I was trying to perceive of a way of presenting this material in such a way that it's digestible and people could make decisions on it. I thought perhaps we could, you know, recraft some of the language, you know, just create a basic standard in terms of timelines, whatever it might be, 6 months, a year, and make that for every one of the motions, whatever it is.
I
feel that there needs to be something. Otherwise, they're just going to languish and nothing's ever going to get done. So that's why I'm presenting it. But go ahead.
My last comment on this. I mean, it just says to me that if they regard it as subjective, that it's coming from me individually to talk about the need to have video and audio streaming, to have collaboration with journalism and broadcast schools in any particular local area, or subjective to have an integration of social media into broadcasting, that says to me that if, in fact, some people think that, that says to me that they are completely unaware of what has been going on for the past 25 years in broadcasting in general. Now, it's very easy to get people
Jim,
in and back these things
yeah,
up.
I'm
just
sorry
saying,
to interrupt
I'm
you.
Saying,
These bills are not, they have not been introduced to the PMB as coming from you. If they know that, it's from some other source.
That's correct.
It's just a question of timing. They haven't even had a chance to look at and digest any, 95% of it. It's not being presented as Jim's motion. It's being presented as motions from the committee, and that's all that's being shared.
Just to clarify.
Okay, fine. Okay. All right.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Thank you. So that airs out things a bit. So the question at this point, that may be enough of a discussion to decide if how we want to go forward. So, do we want to engage in recrafting any of these motions, or do we not? What is the sense of that? Or do my sense is that you don't.
I don't want to do it tonight. Hell, I don't want to do it.
Ken to the stack.
Okay. Yes, Ken.
Well, just in regards to the motion on the use of disclaimers, and as opposed to setting a policy, I feel disclaimers and some of the other things that the other motions that we approved were just a question of best practices, which is, it's a fact, though, if the executive director decides to implement disclaimers in whatever fashion he decides is the most appropriate best practice for our network, or one station at a time, any way he wants to implement it, then it's fine. It's really within the prerogative, within the scope of the activity of operations. It doesn't have to be set as policy. So I think that since, you know, being in the real world and we have the executive director there, that motion about disclaimers and perhaps some other motions we made may just fall into the prerogative of the executive director. And he would say, well, yeah, I'm going to do that, or no, I would never do that unless I was forced to from a resolution from the PNB, or, well, we're going to put it in anyhow. You know, since we have the fortunate benefit of having the executive director here, I think that that's an avenue we really have to consider. There's no necessity to go through the PNB if the executive director considers it an appropriate best practice which should be implemented in some fashion. That motion on disclaimers or any other motions we might have brought up. That's all.
Okay, Benito?
I just want to say that, number one, I agree with, support most, if not all, of what Catherine summarized as her interpretation of the comments from PMB members. And specifically, I would say that, you know, based on the way PMB meetings generally go, there just, rightly or wrongly, there just isn't 45 minutes, an hour, to consider one motion. You know, I don't care what the motion is. You know, general, that time does not exist. And so the shorter, more succinct that these motions can be made, modified, will assist in getting them approved. That's it.
Max,
okay,
to the
thank you. Yes, Max.
Yeah, I just want to endorse what Ken said. I know in some of our earlier conversations about these motions, I kept saying to myself, these are things that I would do anyway, and I didn't necessarily feel like we needed to have a motion from a committee or the board to do it, because they do fall under operations, which is why I said on several occasions I was concerned about a bit of an overreach or us being a little bit onerous, if you will, in terms of the role of the committees and the board. So I don't know how to guarantee, because I don't want to necessarily say that, but I do think, as I said many times, I think Jim's motions, a lot of them are very solid. The question is, you know, when you analyze where our stations are, resource-wise, et cetera, are they really in a position to execute, particularly in the timeline that Jim put forward? And so, the reason I say I endorse what Ken said is I do think, I won't call it common sense or more of a rational approach. I won't say those words because I'm not sure that's appropriate. But I think we do need to have confidence that with me in place, I'm going to be working with the program directors, the general managers, et cetera, to put a lot of these things in place. But there's a, you know, the desire to do it has to be matched with the reality of what resources we have and our capacity. And as you all know, our people often are doing more than one job at the stations that they're at. And so, you know, I just want to put that in context.
Okay. So let's take a straw poll. Do we want to work to change any of these motions, update any of these motions? So I'll just take a straw poll in whatever fashion to make them more improved, more accessible to people, more accessible to the staff. So I would say
this is
a yes or no.
Can I ask a question? I would wonder if we might have Jim, who originally wrote most of these motions, reconsider them, taking into consideration the comments from the PNB. In fact, Jim, if you want to go to the audio of the last PNB open session, you can listen to the comments and then and take into consideration what Catherine has been saying and suggest some modifications for this committee, or possibly if there's any way we can interface with one or more program directors to discuss them, these motions with a program director. But at any rate, I think that we could would it be feasible to have Jim go back over these after listening to the PNB meeting and suggest a solution to this? Go ahead.
I was just saying that to me, I think that might be a lot of work for Jim at this time because of, you know, other situations. I think it's something, a task that could be shared, perhaps. I'm certainly willing to work with Jim or you or anyone else to see what could be done. I wouldn't want to put the full burden on Jim. But, Jim, you can take the full burden if you want.
Director
to Stack, if I may.
Well, I personally think we should bring the program directors into this committee and talk about all this, because the whole point is to, you know, there's a whole, you know, I've been thinking about this stuff for 25 years, and, you know, I've stated my opinion about my level of opinion about some people on the PNB and their relationship to the knowledge about these kind of issues. I think that I think it'd be interesting to have the program directors involved in these kind of discussions, because the whole thing is just to improve everything. That's all. I mean, you know, like this is not some of these are no-brainers. I mean, to work with journalism schools and broadcast schools, do I have to recraft that? It's sort of silly to me. And certain things we used to do. I can see certain things I've put in here. We used to do that at BAI many years ago. I'd be perfectly willing to do that. I think that, you know, this committee will turn over in about a month or so anyway. So, you know, there's no guarantee that I'll be here. So, you know, I just look on these kind of issues as issues that will just go into the ether, and, we'll be back in the same situation where these stations sort of, you know, doing what they do, and that's that. But I think the program directors would be interesting to have a discussion about this, because those are the guys who have to actually implement on the ground. And I'd be interested to hear them. I was actually to have a lawyer come and help me with this. I actually put out a call 2 months ago to a person I know at Columbia Law School to come and help me with this, precisely because of this issue. But I have to so I just think that, you know, I would be perfectly willing to keep pressing on. I'm not going to sit there and spend a lot of time right now, because I'm in hospitals all the time. I'm not going to be sitting here looking at this stuff for the next couple of weeks. I guarantee you. But, you know, down the road, perhaps. But, you know, again, I'd like to have a next meeting, maybe or before we sort of phase out into the hinterland, I'd like to have the program directors in this call and have a serious discussion about what they think they can do or not do in their stations to make it better.
Well, we did invite them at the beginning, I seem to recall. Eric.
Okay, I think Benito might have been, but if I'll just go ahead. And...
Oh, was that Benito?
No, that was me, Maxie.
Oh, Maxie.
But
I'm okay.
After you, go ahead. Go ahead. I'll go after you.
I was going to say...
Eric?
I was going to say, Jim mentioned something interesting. A new panel is going to be seated relatively soon. I'm not comfortable with making a 5-4 Supreme Court ruling before. I think they need to be more involved, the incoming panel, more involved in this. Jim mentioned he may not be here. I'm thinking that may be either unfortunate or beside the point at the risk of sounding crass. There's an incoming panel, brand new panel, and I think their input should weigh heavily in what's being discussed here. You know, perhaps the proposals can be transitioned to someone else. Someone else can carry the mantle. But it's kind of late at this game. I mean, we ideally could have made recommendations or finalized actions on these proposals probably weeks ago. For whatever reason, that did not happen. But we should allow the new panel, I think, to have substantial input into these motions and these resolutions. I'm not comfortable finalizing this.
Okay, Maxie.
Yeah, I'm going to respectfully push back on the notion that the program directors should be involved in this process, not because I don't think they should have input, but I don't think that, quite honestly, they as a collective represent the type of expertise we want to be involved in this process. And again, I say that respectfully, having dealt with them, knowing them, and having met with them. Unfortunately, and I said this when I went around with my PowerPoint, we have professionals in positions who are not qualified for the positions that they hold. So to use them as a sounding board to understand how to proceed with policy, I think is a grave mistake. We have the opportunity, as we are with greater public, to deal with an organization that understands best practices from a research base, and can give us answers to how we proceed in revenue generation from a research and data-driven approach. That's expertise that we could use to make sound decisions regarding how we generate revenue in the future. I think the same can be said for programming. We are looking at, and I've put a call out to the Public Radio Program Directors Organization to see what membership for our 5 stations would look like. And if we are able to secure that in a financially responsible way, the expertise there far outweighs anything we have at Pacifica, myself included, and would be useful in these conversations. Again, I don't have a problem with most of the things Jim has proposed. The issue is the timing and the best way to execute. And I think we'd be much better served with expertise outside of our organization to help us with that, as I said earlier, than to draw from what is known within, because again, we just simply aren't qualified, in my opinion, to render competent decisions on that at this stage.
All right, Jim, to the stack.
And Benito.
Okay. Hold on. I'm sorry. Okay. So, Jim, can we have Benito, and then you come
sure.
in? Benito hasn't spoken on this too much yet. Go ahead, Benito.
Yeah, I just thank you, Catherine. I was just going to ask Maxie to clarify what he said a second ago. He was saying that we could get better expertise from greater public and blank. I didn't get what the other blank was.
Public Radio Program Directors, PRPD, They, like greater public, do research-based analysis on trends in the field as to what are best practices in terms of programming strategy, in terms of new media, extending beyond the broadcast radio signal, etc. And we have access to that organization. The question is, will it make sense from a membership standpoint? And if so, there are best practices that they can share with us that can inform these motions better than our current staff.
If I can respond.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so what Maxie is saying makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, the going back to his earlier point about we need to inform our emotions with facts. And I agree with his observation that many times a lot of these PNB motions, and I'm not even talking about the programming committee, but just in generally, is just a bunch of, you know, warmed over, at best, opinions of one or two people. So that makes a lot of sense. Maxie's thrust makes a lot of sense to me. I would just ask again, Maxie, give me that name. Other than Greater Public, what's the other group's name?
PRPD, Public Radio Program Directors.
Okay.
Okay, Jim.
Mm-hmm. All right. You know, I'm looking at one of these resolutions we haven't dealt with on traffic rent management, which is a no-brainer, like Radio 101. And I guess it's laughable to me to think that that would be something that would have to be, like, sort of argued about, again, at the national level. Because in some cases, if sound traffic management procedures were in place at each station, certainly in stations like in New York, it would probably boost, when we were arguing about 5 or 10% increases annually, I have a feeling in some of these low audience situations, it would boost it by about 5 or 10%, almost that really rapidly. Now, on podcasting policy, I sent to this committee polling data. What becomes data that is, quote, non within us talking to ourselves? Polling data from Pew about how people use podcasting. I sent a report from the Tau Journalism Center at Columbia University about podcasting. That's something I didn't write. Someone else wrote that. I mean, I could come in with experts up the wazoo, if necessary, to back any of these things up. I didn't do that because I felt some of them are no-brainers, like traffic management. Now, if I'm back on the committee, boy, will I come in and do that. And I will not, and I will be coming in like gangbusters. But, you know, I do think it's good to get people from outside of Pacifica to have some objectivity. But then being in an academic environment all the time, I don't necessarily accept the fact that somebody with a bunch of pedigrees or credentials, that person is not necessarily the messiah of truth and wisdom. You know, I mean, I don't have that feeling to start with. So I just have to sort of throw that in the mix, because if you guys wanted to get expertise, man, I sure as hell could have laid that on you guys. But, you know, and I will if I am on the committee again. You're going to get it in spades. So, I don't know, like, so you're going to get in spades so much, you're going to go, what's he bringing somebody from Harvard or some other journalism school like that? I'm sick of hearing them, okay? I'll bring it in spades. Okay.
Okay. Great. Grace, okay, Grace. I wanted to speak as well. I'll put myself after you.
Okay.
If you're going to make a motion, then let me speak, okay? And then you make your motion. So I just wanted to point out that it looks like that there is work to be done on this, many of these things, and I want to point out that the difficulty, from my perspective, of bringing these motions to fruition is volume. So
it would be useful if we want to bring something to the PMB in one of the last meetings, that those motions be identified as the ones to focus on. But however, I think it would be also good for us to consider using our time to shape up these ideas so that we can represent something coherent to the next committee. Okay, Grace.
I'd just like to suggest, I think that there's some interest in taking up other items on the agenda, if I'm getting feeling from people. I think we should just postpone consideration of these motions to the next meeting or the meeting after that. So that would be my motion, to postpone consideration of these motions.
Does that need a second, or...
I guess it does. Would anyone like...
No seconds are needed in committee.
Okay. So are there any objections to postponing to the next meeting? Okay, hearing none, we will postpone this discussion to the next meeting. Though, doesn't mean we have to postpone working on them if you can come to the next meeting with some coherent suggestions. Okay, so next on our agenda, what do we have next? We have the motion that about the Supreme Court, and we have the discussion on why we're having meetings every week. So, Jim, would you like to present your motion on the Supreme Court?
Yeah. Next week, on February 25th, the Supreme Court will be having a session where we'll be discussing the case of Manhattan Access Corporation versus Didi Halleck and Jesus Papalito Melendez. And that is a case that concerns Pacifica very directly, because it's based on the fact that in the state of New York, when public access television was established, it was very clear in the intent of the state legislature that the First Amendment would be the rationale for setting up public access TV in New York. That's the only case in the United States where that kind of thing exists. And the arguments being made in the case back and forth include the fact that the Manhattan Neighborhood Network, in defending themselves against the fact that they sort of banned Jesus Melendez and Didi Halleck from the premises. I'm oversimplifying it. There was a film they made about the 1% representing Manhattan Neighborhood Community Access Corporation. That was banned. But the amicus briefs filed by the various corporations defending Manhattan Community Access Corporation, or MNN, come from organizations that are financed by the Koch brothers. So this includes the Cato Institute, the Pacific Legal Foundation and Tech Freedom, the Internet Television Association has filed a brief in defense of this whole argument of Manhattan Neighbor Network, because they want to basically knock out public access TV. And in defense, and in one of the briefs of Manhattan Neighborhood Network, they cite in their defense the case of Momia Abu-Jamal versus NPR. And they use that as a defense to ban Didi Halleck and Melendez, because they say that, well, you know, as you guys may remember, Momia Abu-Jamal was to be on NPR making commentaries. He was attacked by the right wing, thrown off, and then Pacifica, I know BAI, aired his commentary. So the defenders include, I sent you a leaflet, the American Civil Liberties Union, the New York County Lawyers Association,
the National Police Academy Project Plan. They are a National Lawyers Guild outfit in Chicago that filed a brief defending Dede Halleck and Melendez because they feel it'll impact on their ability to deal with countering police brutality in the field. The brief is up there at that link at the Supreme Court. So I think this is something, and in New York City, the ACLU, the New York Civil Liberties Union, and the National Coalition Against Censorship have all filed in defense of Dede Halleck and Melendez. So, and this is a case that, in a way, can remind us of what happened to Pacifica when the Seven Dirty Words case was argued in front of the Supreme Court, Pacifica versus FCC. So this is a pretty significant case, and I'm putting in a resolution that we send up to the board that we support Dede Halleck and Papaleto Melendez in their arguments in front of the Supreme Court next week.
And read your motion.
Let's see.
You want me to read it?
Whereas the case of Dede Halleck versus Manhattan Neighborhood Network represents a direct attack on the First Amendment of the United States, and that this case, reminiscent of the case of Pacifica versus the FCC, that enshrined the Seven Dirty Word Doctrine, will have a decisive impact on public media in the U.S. when the Supreme Court of the United States hears it on February 25th, 2019. Be it resolved that the Pacifica Foundation stands behind Dede Halleck and Jesus Papaleto Melendez in their defense of the First Amendment and is opposed to Manhattan Neighborhood Network infringing on their rights.
Okay. Are there any comments on this motion?
Benito.
Yes, Benito.
So, yeah, I think that I feel like blindsided is, I guess, the best way how to say. I don't question what's being said, your representation, Jim. But the point is that we were given an agenda, and we got a motion. It included your motion, I think, if I remember correctly. But that's all we had. You know, we don't have any background information on this case. And I can see that, okay, if the case is going to be heard next week, that, you know, I mean, time is of the essence. But the bottom line is that you're asking this committee, and you would be asking the PNB to, and I don't even know if you can come before the PNB before the 25th. So practically speaking, I don't see how the PNB or this committee, even much less the PNB, could, you know, cast an informed vote. And again, that's not questioning, you know, your sincerity or the accuracy of what you represented. It's just a question of time. So that's it.
Okay.
I mean, the only people who would know about this are the two of you from the start. That's it.
All right. Anyone else would like to comment? Okay. Are there any objections to this motion? Grace?
Yeah.
Grace, I would like to give Jim about 5 minutes more to explain this in greater depth.
But he
don't. With the rest.
I'm putting down that you object, so we'll go to a vote, Benita. Jim, did you want to...
Madam Chair.
Excuse me?
I'd like to speak.
Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I can appreciate what Grace is trying to do. trying to give Jim more time, but I don't think that that resolves the issue, at least not for me. The point is, I got to be able to read stuff. Don't just throw this at me during the meeting. You know, Jim explaining stuff for 5 more minutes ain't going to help me.
Okay, that's fair. Jim, do you want to take another 5 more minutes? Or have you completed your introduction?
No, let me just read something that has to do with this.
Point of information. This is Ken. Point of information. Can you give us the reference, the link of what you're reading so we can do the research ourselves? Like the name of the case?
I sent you.
You already sent it out?
I sent it to everybody. I sent it about 8 o'clock. I sent the.
Okay, well, thank you. Go ahead.
I sent the link to the Supreme Court website, and I sent the ACLU's piece on it, which they published a couple of days ago. Let me just see if I can pull that up. Let's see. I sent a PDF of it. There it is. All right, I'm going to read it very quickly. This is written by a lawyer, Lamya Agarwalia. The Supreme Court is considering whether government can dodge the First Amendment by outsourcing its power. The First Amendment bars the government from censoring speech it doesn't like. That rule also goes for a private organization that takes on a government role. But when exactly is an organization considered a stand-in for the government? The Supreme Court will soon hear a case to decide this. Before smartphones, the internet, and digital cameras, it wasn't easy to get your videos in front of a mass audience. But in some places, there was one surefire way: public access cable TV. For decades, various state and local governments have required cable companies to set aside channels for public use. These channels have become tools for creative exploration and provide artists, educators, and activists a platform to speak directly to their communities. They're a home for everything from talk shows to music videos to stream of consciousness rants on any subject you can think of. As New York City is a hub for artistic self-expression, it makes sense that it's off Broadway has reflected the creative pulse of the city. A nonprofit called Manhattan Neighborhood Network operates the public access channels for the borough. By law, it must broadcast all legal content that it gets in the order received. That's what I meant when I referred to the unusualness of this, of any public access station in the country. Several years ago, New York artists and activists Didi Halleck and Jesus Papaleto Melendez produced a video and submitted it to MNN, which aired it once but then banned it because it supposedly threatened the guards who work at MNN's building. The network also suspended Halleck for 1 year and Melendez for life from submitting content. So they sued MNN for violating their free speech rights. Not coincidentally, Halleck and Melendez, while strong supporters of public access channels, have long been vocal critics of MNN. They pushed back against its decision to give huge raises to its executives while at the same time cutting off funding for media grants to the community. And the 1% Visits El Barrio, the video they sought to air, criticized the network for its refusal to allow them entry to the opening of its new community center. And they have a link there which shows you the big drama that went on that day. It is well established that the government cannot censor protected speech, a principle especially important when that speech criticizes the government. But in general, a private TV network can run or not run whatever content it likes. So which rule does MNN fall under? The state action doctrine asks whether conduct can be fairly attributed to the state or to a private party. As we argue in our friend of the court brief supporting Halleck and Melendez, in this case, MNN's broadcast actions and decisions are state action. New York City has implemented its very specific vision for public access channels through MNN.
because the city's first come, first serve policy leaves MNN no room to decide what to broadcast or even in what order to broadcast videos. It has made the network a virtual arm of the government. That means the First Amendment applies to MNN, and it cannot pick and choose videos based on what's in them. The government can't shrink its constitutional responsibilities by delegating power to private entities, nor can it avoid its constitutional obligations by creating rules or entering contracts that leave a private entity with essentially no decisions to make at all. The First Amendment would mean little if the government could simply avoid it by outsourcing its power to private entities to decide what is worthy of public discourse and what must be silenced. So that's their ACL memo that they sent around the country.
This is Grace.
Okay.
Back?
Yes, Grace.
Yeah, I just also read the ACLU opinion on this case, and I think that this is actually very appropriate because we are known as free speech radio. You know, I don't generally favor the PNB being clogged up with taking positions on current events issues, but this is so close to the basic mission of Pacifica and to support free speech that I think we should have an editorial viewpoint on this, or at least that it should be considered by the national board. And it's appropriate because it's a programming decision and it's right up our alley as because we're dedicated to free speech. So I will send this ACLU opinion on this case, or it's an article anyway on the ACLU opinion, and they support Halleck and Melendez. I'll send it to as many people as I have on this committee.
Okay, thank you.
I'm supporting this motion because it's very timely right now. So it should go to the PNB at the next PNB meeting.
Yes, whether it will be gotten to is another story, but I'm going to take the vote. A yes will support this motion and no does not. Grace Aaron?
Catherine, I'm sorry. Can you read the motion once
again,
please?
You want to read it again? Okay.
No, if you could.
Let me see if I can find it. Whereas the case of D.D. Halleck versus Manhattan Neighborhood Network represents a direct attack on the First Amendment of the United States, and that this case, reminiscent of the one of the case of Pacifica versus
FCC
that enshrined the seven dirty word doctrine, will have a decisive impact on public media in the United States when the Supreme Court of the United States hears it on February 25th, 2019. Be it resolved that the Pacifica Foundation stands behind D.D. Halleck and Jesus Capoletto Melendez in their defense of the First Amendment and is opposed to Manhattan Neighborhood Network infringing on their rights. And that's the motion. Okay? So, Grace Aaron. Grace Aaron.
Yes.
Ken Aaron.
Yes.
Benito Diaz.
No.
Jim Dingman.
Yes.
Okay. Anissa Farooqui. Steve Pride. Steve, are you there? Eric Ramey.
Catherine, I'll pass,
yes.
If I may.
Pass. Okay. Cliff, Murray Cliff Smith, Tom Voorhees. Okay, I'll put in my vote as a yes. And Eric, you're the last person to...
I'm going to abstain.
Okay, let's see. Eric abstains. All right, so this motion carries with 1, 2, 3, 4 yeses, 1 no, and 1 abstention. Okay.